Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
First of December 2011 in Radadesh, Belgium, reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 5, Chapter 8, The Character of Bharat Maharaj, Text 10. We end at 8:30, is that correct? 8:30? Okay, so it's a prose verse. Nunam yarya sadava upashama shila kripana surida evam virharte Swartam api guru taran upekshante. Nunam. Indeed. He. Certainly. Aryaha. Those who are advanced in civilization. Sadavaha. Saintly persons. Upashama Shilaha. Even though completely in the renounced order of life. Kripana Suridha. The friends of the helpless. Evam Vida Arte. To execute such principles. Swa Artam Api. Even their own personal interests. Guru Taran, very important. Upekshante, neglect. So here's Bharat Maharaj's, what we would call rationalization for his behavior. You all know what rationalization is? Okay. You all know? There you go. Okay. Anybody know the difference between justification and rationalization? Okay, to justify, just like in this Bhagavatam, the text is what we call right justified. In other words, all the text ends at the same place on the right border. Sometimes when you type, you have the text ending at different places, but usually text is at least left justified. So justified means that you try to explain to somebody else how what you're doing is proper, how it fits together, even when it's not actually justifiable. Like sometimes you see text that's left and right justified and the words are spread out so much you can hardly read them. So justification is like that. You're trying to force an explanation to others of your behavior that doesn't really work. And rationalization is when you're doing that for yourself. So justification, you know you're wrong, but you're trying to explain it to someone else. Justification, you're trying to explain it to yourself. This is part of what of the four defects of the conditioned soul? Cheating. This is the cheating propensity, and we often, or practically always, are engaged in this cheating propensity to ourselves. That we cheat ourselves and we rationalize what we're doing, even though we know on a certain deep level that what we're doing is wrong. Now, Bharat Maharaj, being a Vaishnava, and having been a Rajarshi, certainly understands transcendent philosophy as well as ordinary dharma. So his rationalization here is going to be by using truth. We talk about, Krishna says to cut down this banyan tree with the sword of knowledge. Knowledge is like a sword, and like any kind of weapon, you can use it for good purposes or for destructive purposes. So we find people like Hiranyakashipu and Kamsa, they were speaking genuine philosophy, but they were using it for destructive purposes. Just like Kamsa, after he saw Durga in the sky, he's apologizing to Vasudeva and Devaki. And what does he say in his apology? Something about the law of karma. What does he say? Yes, this was just your bad karma, that your babies died, and it's not really my fault. I'm not the doer. So when Kamsa's apologizing with tears in his eyes, falling at their feet, and he let them out of prison then, what was his justification and rationalization? Was that, well, I'm not really the doer, so I didn't really kill your children. That's like Krishna says. Kamsa's a fool who thinks that he's the slayer or someone is slain. But Kamsa was using this as a way of getting out of his responsibility. Hiranyakashipu spoke transcendent philosophy to his relatives when they were mourning the death of Hiranyaksha. And what philosophy did he speak then? Talked about how you're not the body, how we're eternal. And the way he understood that was, well, I'm eternal and time's eternal, so I'm just going to keep trying to become the lord of material nature. That was how he used it. So here we're going to see Bharat Maharaj do the same kind of thing. He's going to take something that's true, and he's going to misapply it in order to rationalize for himself what he wants to do. What does he want to do here? Where are we in the story? He wants to have the company of the deer. He wants to take care of this deer. Okay, translation. So keep this in mind as we read this translation in purport by Srila Prabhupada. Translation. Even though one is in the renounced order, because Bharat is in the renounced order, he's given up the kingdom, he's living as a vanaprastha. One who is advanced certainly feels compassion for suffering living entities. Is that true? Should we feel compassion for suffering living entities? And should we do that even if we're in a renounced order? Compassion's not just the province of the grihasthas. Well, the grihasthas are supposed to give in charity. The grihasthas are the charity givers in society. They are the ones who are exhibiting compassion. But even those who are brahmacharis, vanaprastha, sannyasi. So this is true. Okay. One should certainly neglect his own personal interests, although they may be very important, to protect one who has surrendered. Is that also true? Should we be willing to sacrifice our own personal interest, even if very important, to take care of a surrendered entity that's in distress? Especially kshatriyas do that, and Bharat was a kshatriya. Now this is a very important point. But isn't everybody supposed to do that to some extent? If someone's in distress and they're surrendered, aren't you supposed to put aside your own interests and take care of them, if you can? That's a general principle, but certainly it's especially true for the kshatriyas. Okay, let's go to this translation again, the points he's making. Even though one is in the renounced order, one who is advanced certainly feels compassion for suffering living entities. So his first point is about your emotions, how you feel, that you feel compassion. One should certainly neglect his own personal interests, although they may be very important, to protect one who has surrendered. So that's about behavior. Purport. Maya is very strong. So that's Srila Prabhupada's first point here. Amazing, because Bharat Maharaj is speaking something that's true. And he's speaking something that's spoken by Krishna himself in the Bhagavad Gita. And Krishna is telling Arjuna, neglect your own personal interests. In the name of philanthropy, altruism, and communism, people are feeling compassion for suffering humanity throughout the world. Now that's a very interesting statement to follow the statement, Maya is very strong. Now, Maya is very strong. In the name of philanthropy, altruism, and communism, people are feeling compassion for suffering humanity throughout the world. Do we have any objection to feeling compassion for suffering humanity throughout the world? Are we against compassion for suffering humanity? Do we consider compassion for suffering humanity to be an illusion? We'll continue. Philanthropists and altruists do not realize that it is impossible to improve people's material conditions. So Prabhupada's going to make a very unusual and difficult to understand argument here as to why philanthropic, altruistic, and communistic compassion for people suffering is Maya. So what is his argument? Philanthropists and altruists do not realize it is impossible to improve people's material condition. Now he's going to develop this. Material conditions are already established by the superior administration according to one's karma. They cannot be changed. So what is his argument as to why such compassion is illusion? You can't do anything about it. That if someone's destined to suffer, they're going to suffer, and that's it. The only benefit we can render to suffering beings is to try to raise them to spiritual consciousness. So Prabhupada's using here the word only. He's saying you can't benefit people materially. Why? What's his argument again? It's destined. You can't change, it's already destined. There's a higher authority than you who's already decided what they're going to suffer, and you can't countermand that higher authority. Saying that you can benefit people spiritually by raising them to try to raise them to spiritual consciousness. Material comforts cannot be increased or decreased. It is therefore said in Srimad Bhagavatam 1.5.18, Ta labhyate dukkhavad anyata sukham. As far as material happiness is concerned, that comes without effort, just as tribulations come without effort. Material happiness and pain can be attained without endeavor. One should not bother for material activities. So this would, of course, also apply to ourselves. If one is at all sympathetic or able to do good to others, he should endeavor to raise people to Krishna consciousness. So first Prabhupada said raise them to spiritual consciousness. Now he's saying raise people to Krishna consciousness, more specific. Spiritual consciousness could be in general, could be Brahman or Paramatma. So Prabhupada is saying this is the only benefit. In this way, everyone advances spiritually by the grace of the Lord. Now that's also an interesting statement. Twice here, Prabhupada is saying that an altruist can try. He said to try to raise him to spiritual consciousness and endeavor to raise people to Krishna consciousness. So if we're altruistic, we can make an effort. And how is that accomplished? By the grace of the Lord. For our instruction, Bharat Maharaj acted in such a way. In what such a way? Raising people to Krishna consciousness? What does he mean by such a way? What is the antecedent for the word such? What way did Bharat Maharaj act? In illusion. I've seen people wear a t-shirt that says, if you can't be a good example, at least be a strong warning. So we find that sometimes the great devotees, they give us a negative example. Now, whether Bharat Maharaj did this intentionally or not, I don't know. There's no indication. But Maharaj Yudhisthira, in the gambling match, gave us a negative instruction. Bhishma, by siding with Duryodhan, gave us a negative example. We should be very careful not to be misled by so-called welfare activities conducted in bodily terms. Now, what is this misled? Misled into how misled? Does this mean we should never do anything nice? If somebody falls down and they've cut their finger, we say, oh, well, goodbye, and we walk away, and we don't give them a Band-Aid. What does this mean, misled? Okay, to forget our life's mission, what other kind of misled could we have? To think that we're the doer, because Prabhupada's main objection here, at least here, to material welfare activities is thinking I'm the doer. Now, then he's saying one should not give up his interest in attaining the favor of Lord Vishnu at any cost. So I'm understanding that as the main way. I mean, one way is the doer, which Prabhupada already talked about twice, saying that you cannot change somebody's karma. So we could be misled in that way. And then the other way we could be misled is to give up our own, what is how Prabhupada put here, our own interest in attaining the favor of Lord Vishnu, which is what Bharat Maharaj does. Bharat Maharaj sacrifices his spiritual life for the sake of the material help of the deer, with the justification that one should be willing to sacrifice one's own interest to help others. And Prabhupada says, don't be misled. Don't give up. He's saying here, one should not give up his interest in attaining the favor of Lord Vishnu at any cost. Generally, people do not know this or they forget it. So either they don't know it in the first place or they've learned it and then they forget it. Consequently, they sacrifice their original interest, the attainment of Vishnu's favor, and engage in philanthropic activities for bodily comfort. Nunam yarya sadava upashama shila kripana surida evam vidarte swartam api gurutaram upekshante. Even though one is in the renounced order, one who is advanced certainly feels compassion for suffering living entities. One should certainly neglect his own personal interests, although they may be very important to protect one who has surrendered. So this is a very difficult purport. And this is the kind of purport that we could easily discuss at length for a long time and write many papers on and get into the detailed nuances of it. And I was really meditating on how to do this justice in a few moments. You know, it's already 8:17. So we see a few things here that are interesting. One is that the duty of a king is to look after people's material welfare. That's their duty. Just like that's the duty of a parent. The duty of a parent is to feed their child. The parent does not say, when the child's born, the mother doesn't say, well, you're going to live or die whether I give you breast milk or not, so goodbye. That's criminal. Right? Even among, anybody considers that criminal. To just say, well, whether I feed you or not, whether I clothe you or not, that's your destiny. So, you know, I'm just going to do something else and take care of yourself, kid. You know, it's against the law. And it's interesting, Krishna speaking to Vasudeva and Devaki says, anyone who's able to take care of elderly parents or their spiritual master and doesn't do so is considered dead while breathing and is condemned. And the king is like a super family member. So in an ordinary family, you're supposed to take care of your children, your elderly parents, the husband's supposed to maintain the wife's supposed to serve the husband. And the king sees the whole kingdom or world as his family. And what does the king do? We read about in the Bhagavatam, what are the Vaishnav kings, the Rajarshis, Maharaj Yudhisthira, Maharaj Prithu, Maharaj Priyavrata, Bharat, Rishabdev, what did they do? They dug wells so people would have water. They would build parks. They would build schools. They'd build, you know, they'd take care of medical facility, education, water, food. They also performed yajnas for Vishnu. And they used part of the tax money for those yajnas. So therefore, everybody was indirectly performing yajna for Vishnu. And they performed all these apparently fruitive activities to please the Lord. We were just, I forget where we were in the world. Oh, Vrindavan. Well, we were giving a class on Prithu Maharaj. And how Prithu Maharaj took care of all of the material needs of the citizens in the mood of a servant. That I'm a servant of Vishnu, and this job is given to me by Vishnu. And Bhaktivedanta Thakur talks about this in relation to his family. He says, I'm maintaining my family members, seeing them as your servant. So that's certainly taking care of people's bodily needs. And most of us have some family, right? Everyone's born to a mother and father. Most of us have some family. And we have some duty to take care of our family members, including their material needs. And if you're kshatriya, particularly if you're kshatriya, then you're meant to take care of the material and spiritual needs of everyone in the society. And the kshatriyas were supposed to do that even at harm to their own interests. So if there was some need, they were supposed to empty their whole treasury house. This is explained in the description of autumn. Give away everything. We have Maharaj Shibhi, who gave away his own flesh to save a pigeon, not even a human being. Ranti Dev, who gave away his last food to serve a beggar dog eater. So this was particularly the mood of the Kshatriyas, that they were willing to sacrifice their wealth, their life. The only thing Kshatriyas wouldn't sacrifice, what's the only thing Kshatriya wouldn't sacrifice? Their honor. Brahmins are willing even to sacrifice their honor for truth. Vaishyas are willing to sacrifice their honor for money. And Shudras are willing to sacrifice their honor for pleasure. But Kshatriyas will not sacrifice their honor. They won't give up their truthfulness. So this is the mood of the Kshatriya when they're in the Grihastha ashram. But when they take up the renounced ashram, that's no longer their duty. So one problem we have here is that what's right at one point is not right at another point. And what's right for one person is not right for another person. Like it's the business of the Kshatriya also to punish the criminals. But that's not the business of the Brahmanas, or the Shudras, or the Vaishyas. And this is even understood in modern society. You know, we're not, I assume most of us, or all of us here, none of us here are police officers. So it's not our duty to arrest people and put them in jail. And if you're a retired police officer, it's not your duty anymore either. So one problem we have here is that Bharat Maharaj is doing what has now become another's duty. That's one of his problems. And that we should be careful of. The first question we should ask ourselves in terms of doing something is it my service? And is it my service now? It may have been my service a week ago or a month ago or a year ago, but it may not be my service now. So what is my service? I'm a servant. Now, there are emergencies when one can go beyond the bounds of one's ordinary service. But then one should see that it's actually an emergency. So that's his first mistake. He said, he starts off by, this is his justification. Well, even though I'm in the renounced order, I shouldn't be giving up compassion. But this kind of compassion is no longer his duty. It's like once your children have grown up, you're no longer responsible to make sure that their laundry is done and their food is cooked. I mean, unless they're, you know, disabled. It's not your duty anymore. When a man takes sannyas, then making sure that his wife is happy is no longer his duty. When he's a grihastha, he has to say, oh, my dear, you're the most beautiful woman in the world. That's his duty. But that's not his duty when he's a sannyasi. If he's still writing his wife letters, you know, you're the most beautiful woman in the world after he's taken sannyas. That's actually adharma. So what's dharma in one situation is adharma in another. And even for the same person at different points of their life. Like Prabhupada saw one devotee who was very overweight and he said, you shouldn't eat so much. And the devotee said, well, Prabhupada, when I first came, you told me to eat a lot. And Prabhupada said, did you believe me then? He said, so you believe me now. So our duties change in the course of moving through the ashrams, or we may get a different order from our superior, and we have to follow our present order, not some other order. Just like Maharaj Yudhisthira was ordered to lie on the battlefield of Kurukshetra. Normally his dharma as a kshatriya is to tell the truth. So that's one mistake. Now another mistake is the mentality of thinking I'm the doer. Ahankara vimudhatma kartaham iti manyate. This is part of our thinking that we're God. That I am Suridam Sarvabhutanam. We have the word here in the verse, Kripana Surida. Now the devotee is the Surit, the well-wisher of all living entities, but the devotee cannot be the Surit like Krishna can be the Surit. So like Maharaj Prithu, he was taking care of all the citizens thinking, I'm the instrument of Krishna. It's not that I'm the caretaker. But Bharat Maharaj is, according to Prabhupada's purport here, is making this mistake thinking, I'm the caregiver. I can help somebody. Now, it's not that we don't help people, because otherwise we wouldn't help people spiritually either. Both the times Srila Prabhupada talks about helping people spiritually, he says, try to. Right? One should try to raise them. One should endeavor to raise people. Try and endeavor. But they are actually raised by what? The grace of the Lord. So if I'm endeavoring to help people spiritually, and I think I'm the doer, I'm also being misled. I'm simply acting as Krishna's instrument. Whether or not the person is raised in spiritual consciousness depends on the grace of the Lord. And we talk about one needs the grace of Guru and Krishna. And all of us are supposed to act as gurus. All of us should try to raise people in spiritual consciousness, in Krishna consciousness, always recognizing that whether or not the person becomes raised in Krishna consciousness is due to the grace of the Lord, not to my endeavor. Similarly, one should also help people. I mean, I'm thinking about Srila Prabhupada. One early morning when he was translating, he called his servant to take out a little bug that was on his desk and put it outside. And he said, "The bug cannot find any food in my room. Put it outside so it can find some food." So Prabhupada wasn't just concerned about feeding human beings. Like Prabhupada said in Mayapur, no one should go hungry within 10 miles of our temple. He was concerned about feeding the bug in his room. But without thinking, I'm the doer. I mean, you might say, well, why bother if people are going to get what they're going to get anyway? But we could say that spiritually also. Why bother? If someone's going to become Krishna conscious, then Krishna will help them. Let me just sit in my room and read Krishna book and let Krishna help them. So why do we help other people on any level when actually we're not the doer? We can't help anyone. Why are we doing that? To gain the favor of Lord Vishnu. Just like Prithu was doing his duty in order to please Krishna. So we do our duty to please Krishna. And our duty may involve some material help. It may or may not. Depends what our duty is. Like Murari Gupta, it said that he cured people's material and spiritual diseases. He was a doctor. Now, if that's your profession, if you're a doctor, if you're a counselor, then that's your duty to help people also materially as Krishna's servant. Not thinking I'm the doer. This sort of purport does not mean that one should become hard-hearted. Prabhupada's not saying that compassion is illusion. But compassion for something in some area that's not my service, or compassion where I think I'm the doer, that's illusion. And then there's another kind of compassion that's illusion. And that is compassion for others that damages my seeking the favor of Lord Vishnu. So part of that, you could say, is consciousness. If I'm thinking I'm the doer rather than the servant, then my so-called help damages my seeking the favor of Lord Vishnu because I'm in the wrong mentality. I can also say that doing things that are beyond my realm of service damages my seeking the favor of Lord Vishnu because I'm no longer acting as a servant. I'm acting independently. But there's another way in which helping others, either materially or spiritually, can damage my seeking the favor of Lord Vishnu. And that is in terms of my energy. So each of us has a certain amount of energy. And Srila Prabhupada's given us a system where at the best time of the day, when one is fully refreshed after sleeping, when the mode of goodness is dominant, according to Ayurveda, there's a certain time when the three modes are in equibalanced, and then the mode of goodness is there. So during those two times, when things are imbalanced and when the mode of goodness is there, at this time that I give my energy to trying to attain the favor of Lord Vishnu. I make my own interest in attaining the favor of Lord Vishnu the highest priority in my life. Frankly, higher even than helping others materially or spiritually. Prabhupada wrote a very nice letter. He said, the highest principle is to save others, but higher than that is to save yourself. Because frankly, we can't do the other if I haven't saved myself. The way I help others, either materially or spiritually, is first of all, it's my service. Well, how can it be my service unless I'm connected as a servant? First, I have to have sambandha. First, I have to have a relationship with Lord Vishnu, with Lord Krishna as a servant, before I can figure out what is my service and act accordingly. And the second way of helping as an instrument, rather than in the illusion as a doer, well, I first again have to have my relationship with Lord Vishnu. Otherwise, how can I help? I was talking about this in London yesterday, about being a channel for help. So one devotee gave me a lot of money to distribute. So I was distributing this money to different devotees. But I couldn't distribute the money until I got it. Right? Until it actually showed up and I had it, I couldn't distribute it. How can you be distributing something you don't have? So we're always acting as an agent of Krishna. Even materially, we're acting as an agent of somebody's karma. We're not acting independently. So first, our relationship with Lord Vishnu. Now, this can also be misunderstood and misused, just like Bharat Maharaj is misusing this knowledge. So even to say my number one priority is attaining the favor of Lord Vishnu, and I cannot help anybody else materially or spiritually unless I have that in place, can be used as an excuse to neglect our service to others, to be cruel to others. I can't remember where. Oh, I know where it was. I was in Chennai. And one of the devotees was saying, oh, there's propaganda that it's not good to marry another devotee. That if a woman marries a male devotee, that he'll neglect her in the name of preaching. I've actually seen this happen, you know, where the man never takes care of his wife. Prabhupada says a man should protect his wife just like he protects his wealth, personally. But, you know, the man may never see his wife. Because, oh, I have to go preaching. Oh, I have to go to this thing. I have to go to that thing. I have to go to this thing. I have to go to this thing. And they say if you marry a devotee girl, she won't clean your house. She won't cook for you. She'll be saying, oh, I'm finishing my rounds now. Maybe you'll eat sometime. So this is also a misuse. Right? As Prabhupada talked about Arjuna, that he was using Krishna consciousness as an excuse to avoid Krishna consciousness. So this has to be done with great intelligence. How do I make my own endeavor to seek the favor of Lord Vishnu my number one priority, that I do not sacrifice, Prabhupada said here, at any cost? For no reason, at no cost, for no emergency, do I ever sacrifice my interest in attaining the favor of Lord Vishnu, ever. That nothing ever becomes a higher priority of that. The highest principle is to save myself. And yet I don't use that fact as a way of neglecting others or a way of neglecting my other service. That somehow I structure my life so that I give my best energy to seeking the favor of Lord Vishnu. And I act as Vishnu's servant in the world to help people spiritually and materially with the consciousness of being a servant and in the realm of my particular designated service. Then it's perfect. Then it's perfect. If I'm in a temple where there's deer to take care of, and that's my job to take care of the deer because we have a little zoo on the property, then that's my service. So Bharat Maharaj made several mistakes here. First of all, taking care of all the praja was no longer his service. It was now someone else's service. So he was trying to do someone else's service. Then he had the consciousness that I'm the best friend of the deer. I'm the doer. Instead of I'm acting as Krishna's servant. Of course, you can't act as Krishna's servant if it's outside of your service. And then he took care of the deer in such a way that he neglected his own relationship with the Lord. When he was chanting his mantras, he was actually meditating on the deer. Now, he was putting the physical care of the deer above, as his top priority. So he did all this in the name of transcendent philosophy. So, of course, in our Krishna consciousness movement, we've had a lot of misuse of these principles. We've had a lot of proper use and we've had a lot of misuse. We've had a lot of places where the devotees are properly taken care of and a lot of places where the devotees are improperly taken care of in the name of don't be an illusion and think that you can take care of anybody materially. We've seen people who know how to put their own Krishna consciousness first and yet be very giving to others. And yet we see people who, in putting their own Krishna consciousness first, so-called, they're harming others. So we see both proper use and misuse. So what about for ourselves? For ourselves, first of all, to make our own interest in attaining the favor of Lord Vishnu the most important thing in our life and not to put that second or third or fourth at any cost for any reason ever. That I have my connection with the Lord. And I have my connection with the Lord to as high a level of quality as I can possibly do. As possibly as within my ability to control. That you have to have that first. Otherwise, the other things don't make any sense. And then I learn what is my service. And that means what is my service now. Doesn't necessarily mean what was my service last week or what will it be next month or what was my service in another life or what will it be next life. But what is my service now? And my service now probably involves doing something that has some component of compassion or caring in it. There's a high probability that that's the case. I don't think very many people have a service that doesn't involve any kind of compassion or caring. Or at least incidentally. So what is my, and what is not my service? And then within the realm of my service, to act as a servant, to act in the mood that I'm here as Krishna's representative, the person who's actually caring, the person who's actually helping, materially or spiritually, is not me. I don't have the capacity. The person who's actually maintained, even if I'm doing material care, the actual maintainer, the actual protector, the actual friend, is Krishna. Really like one class where Prabhupada said, if a guru thinks that I am the friend, he's the greatest fool. The only real friend can be Krishna. What can I do? I'm delivering Krishna's friendship, that's all. Just exactly, if I give you some money and I say, please give this money to this devotee. Exactly like that. There's a devotee who has serious physical problems because of being beaten by the KGB when he was in prison for distributing Prabhupada's books. So one devotee gave me some money. Please give it to him. And this other devotee had a broken computer and she said, give this money to her. And this person, you know. So I'm the delivery person. That's all. And that's true for everything. Whatever we do, we're just the delivery person. But to be the delivery person for Krishna's mercy is a wonderful, glorious thing. That's our position. That's our eternal position, that I'm Krishna's servant and Krishna uses me to deliver things. You know, if you're used in the material world, then it's not very palatable. But when Krishna uses you, it's wonderful because it's a relationship of love. So that's the consciousness that we need to have. First, get my relationship with Krishna so we can examine. Am I doing that? What's my priority? What's my top priority? Is my top priority that I'm trying to gain the favor of the Lord? That I'm saving myself first? And then we can examine, do I know what my service is? Do I stay within the limits of my service? Do I do my service expertly and not go beyond the limits of my service? Do I make some effort to know what is my service? And then within the realm of my service, what is my consciousness? Is my consciousness that I am the doer or is my consciousness that I am a servant? And within my service, I am acting, again, to gain the favor of Lord Vishnu. I'm not acting to think, I've accomplished this in the world, I've helped this person, I've done this thing. No, but somehow or other, by whatever endeavor I have made, if only Gopinath, Radha Gopinath, are smiling at me. So I tried to cover this as adequately as I could in a short amount of time, and I've talked much more about principles than about details. But I'm sure we could, again, discuss this for a long, long time. Questions, comments, additions, subtractions? Sometimes if you speak truth, people will criticize you. A Brahmana is much more concerned with speaking the truth than with getting respect. Sometimes if you speak the truth, everybody will criticize you. You may be killed even. That's the risk that the preacher takes. Going out on the streets to distribute Prabhupada's books is definitely a way of sacrificing your honor for the sake of truth. Street peddlers are not very honorable in society, are they? They're pretty low rung in society. Someone who walks up to you on the street that you don't know and tries to sell you something, is that a very honorable position? Is it? No. So the devotees, they're willing to take a position of very low honor in society in order to propagate truth. Okay, so if we're trying to help someone spiritually, we see it's and we are successful, we see it's Krishna. We see everything as Krishna, whether it's successful or unsuccessful. People's ability to advance spiritually depends on their own desire and Krishna's grace, which are intimately connected. Yea tamam prapadyante tamstatayava bhajamyaham. Now, having said that, also we should see the people I'm trying to help spiritually. Is it my service? So it's not my Urmila Devi Dasi service to try to help every single person in the world spiritually on an individual level. It just isn't. First of all, there are some people who don't like me. I'm always surprised at that, but some people don't like me. They don't respect me. And if I say something to them, they won't listen. In fact, if I say something to them, it may have the opposite effect. So it's not my service to try to help those people. Some people, it's just sort of socially inappropriate for me to help them. So, you know, one has to see what is my service. And if I try to help somebody spiritually and I'm not able to do so, maybe one of my conclusions is that helping this person is not my service. Maybe just the chemistry between me and that person or the circumstances make it that that person is not willing to hear from me. So if I try to help somebody spiritually and I'm unsuccessful, depending on the situation, I might refer them to somebody else. It depends what detail you're talking about. You know, if I'm just out with the public and I try to help someone and I fail, I go on to the next person. I don't try to force it. If we're talking about some other devotee, then I may recommend that they work with somebody else. I may say, I'm really sorry, I'm not able to help you. Even your own child. You may sometimes have them work with somebody else. Just because someone's your child doesn't necessarily mean that you're the ideal person to help them spiritually in all cases, in all circumstances. In fact, sometimes the opposite is true, especially if they're a teenager. They may have a more rebellious attitude toward their parent than toward somebody else. So that requires some honesty and humility instead of trying to force it. But what you can also look at yourself and see, you know, am I in my trying, am I? Do I need to change my strategies? You know, if I'm trying to help somebody materially, spiritually, by saying you're a hog, dog, camel, and ass, and maybe that's not the best preaching technique for that person. Maybe some people would feel very enlivened by that and say, yes, you know, I'm tired of being a hog, dog, camel, and ass, and I want to surrender to Krishna. Maybe somebody else would be offended. So, you know, it may also just be that you change your dealings with that person. Take a different tact. I mean, I remember many years ago, one devotee came to me in great distress. Someone I met her for the first time. She was in a very difficult situation. So I tried preaching to her in various ways, and it didn't work. Either I had gotten no response or she got more upset. So I just finally said, you know, it'll all be okay. Just chant Hare Krishna. That was all I said. So I just saw her recently in India, and she's doing so well. She's so happy. And she said, I wasn't able to hear you then. She said, now I realize that what you said was good, but I couldn't hear it then. I said, yeah, I know. I had to stop saying anything. So you may want to back off a little bit. It's just like if you're trying to speak to someone who doesn't know your language, talking to them louder doesn't do any good. So, you know, if you're trying to help somebody and you're unsuccessful, try another way. And if that doesn't work, then suggest another person. Yes, Ruby. Okay. So definitely we never want to do something that's going to harden our heart. So if our way of dealing with any problem is to harden ourselves, there's something wrong. That, you know, all right, temporarily as a new devotee, okay. Things like repression and hardening your heart may be very temporarily useful. But as a long-term strategy, or after you've been chanting for a while, it's really a bad idea. It's just really a bad idea. Our whole process is to soften the heart. That's the whole process of bhakti, is to make the heart soft. So I don't believe Bharat Maharaj was supposed to have hardened his heart to the plight of the baby deer. It's explained at the very, very, very end of this story. I mean, the very end. After, in his next life, as Judd Bharat, when he's preaching to Maharaj Rahugana, and Maharaj Rahugana leaves at the end of the story in a purport, Prabhupada said that Bharat Maharaj's main problem was that he never consulted with his guru. He was at Pulaha Ashram, and he never consulted with Pulaha Muni about what to do about this deer. He acted independently. So Prabhupada does not say he should have hardened his heart. He said he should have consulted with his higher authorities. So my understanding is that if something comes to my notice that's wrong and it's outside the realm of my service, then part of my, outside the realm of my service to deal with directly, then what is my service is to inform the proper persons and consult with them and ask them, you know, should I do something about this? Should someone else do something about this? I mean, I had a situation recently where I heard something very disturbing that one of our leaders was saying. I heard that one of our leaders was saying something very disturbing. I didn't hear it directly. I heard it indirectly. and something that I knew was wrong. No question that it was wrong. So first I just sat on the information. I didn't do anything with it. I thought, it's not my business. And then after thinking about it for a while, I thought, well, if it's true that this person is saying this, then this is going to cause harm for so many people in our Hare Krishna movement. And so at least I have to inform the proper authorities. So I wrote a letter to your husband, poor guy. I don't know how many letters he gets a day like this. So I wrote a letter to the GBC chairman, to the sannyas minister, to somebody, people concerned with education and people concerned with women, because it had to do with girls' education. And I just said, this is what I heard from so-and-so. The person I heard it from is himself a leader and a very reliable person. He said he heard it firsthand, that so-and-so person is saying such and such. You know, would you please look into this? And I got a couple of responses, and I'm planning, in fact, one of my to-do lists today is to write back to them and say, did you look into this? Was it actually said, and how has it been resolved? But I'm not going to deal with it personally. I'm not going to go to the person directly and say, hey, what are you doing? Because that's not my service. I don't have that relation. I don't have that kind of relationship with that person. I don't have any authority over that person. I hardly even know the person. I don't have any means to do that in a proper, respectful way. Does that make sense? I was just thinking how you're talking about seeing something dirty. I was once at a temple for a Rath Yatra, and somehow or other we got there really early or something. We had a lot of time. And I noticed that the banister on the stairs was really dirty. And I thought, oh, let me do some service. So I got a cloth and I was cleaning it. And the temple president was really angry with me and decided that my cleaning the banister was an indirect way of insulting the cleanliness standard at the temple. After which I decided that whenever I clean in a place, that I should always do it like at about 9:30 or 10 o'clock at night. So it's very difficult. I mean, I don't know if there's like one answer. I know that hardening your heart is really bad. Don't do that. That's 100% sure. If the way you're keeping to your service is by hardening your heart, that's really dangerous. But how to do it, I don't know. I get into trouble. So I don't know if I'm the best person to... I went to one temple once, and this brahmachari walks up to me and starts telling me his resume in Krishna consciousness. I did this, and I did this, and I had this position. I was thinking, I never asked you, and I really don't care. But he's giving me his whole litany of his service history. And then he says, and Mataji, what department are you in? And I said, the troublemaking department. So I don't know. I definitely have made this mistake of crossing over the limits or crossing over the limits badly. And so I don't know if I'm really a good authority on this. But it does take some... I remember talking to Burjan Prabhu about something in Vrindavan that I was really upset about many years ago. And he looked at me and he said, the first question is this your service? I'm like, no. He said, well, have you gone to the proper authorities about it? Yes, but they haven't done anything. And then he said, well, you know, you can always go to Balaram. I said, why Balaram? He said, well, it's Krishna Balaram temple, and he's so there in charge. And I said, but why Balaram? He said, well, he's the older brother. So I did. I went to Balaram. And every time I was at the Krishna Balaram temple, I went to Balaram, and I complained. And now it got fixed. Finally got fixed. I was just like, wow. And I went to Balaram. I said, thank you. So that, you know, you can also do that. You go to you go to the proper authority. If it's really not your service, go to the authority. They don't do anything, you go to a high. We have a ladder. You can go up the ladder. You know, you can take it to the whole GBC body. If they don't do anything, you can write a letter to Srila Prabhupada. If that doesn't do anything, you go to Radha Gopinath and complain. Right? Because that's ultimately his business. If there's a dharma, it's his business to fix it. And you can go to the Lord and say, you know, you haven't given this to me as my service, so I can't do anything about it directly, but there's this problem and this difficulty, so as your servant, I'm bringing it to your attention. Just like if you work in a company. I like to think of Krishna as my employer, you know, so you work in a company. And if it's something outside of your department and outside of your, you know, you don't have the business to go into someone else's department and fix something. But you can take it to your supervisor and ultimately you can take it to the boss. Is that all right? Then at least you're peaceful that I've done something about it, I've done my duty. At least I do. The hard-heartedness. So yeah, to try within the realm of our service. There are emergencies. There's ordinary, desired, and emergency. So there are emergencies by which we're actually obligated to cross that line of our normal service. You know, if somebody's kid is getting hit by a car and there's no one else around, you don't say, well, it's not my kid. You know, so there are times. But even then, we should be careful. If we've got a 365-day emergency, there's something wrong. I mean, how many emergencies have I actually seen in my life? You know, maybe 10 in my whole life, where you really had to go beyond the limits of what's ordinarily. But yeah, to try within the scope of I'm a servant. So that means what you do, who you talk to, how you do it, how you deal with other people. I mean, that also means always being respectful. That just because you see a problem is not an excuse to blaspheme people. Also, just because you think something wrong is wrong doesn't mean it is wrong. Maybe you're wrong. You know, and that's really embarrassing. I remember talking to one of my kids once. I was really making a point, and he said, you know, Mata, are you sure? And I said, yeah, I'm sure. I'm 100% sure. And there was this long pause, and he said, 100% sure. And then I thought, oops. Maybe he knows something I don't know. You know, I said, well, 95. So there's been plenty of times when I was 100% sure that something needed to be fixed, and I was wrong. It didn't need to be fixed. I didn't know the whole story. So part of acting as a servant is having some humility and you know, looking into things, doing a proper investigation or asking someone to do a proper investigation. I was just telling this to one really fired up devotee who's always trying to solve any possible instance of child abuse in ISKCON, which is wonderful. And I said, but Prabhu, if you don't know it's true, then say alleged. Or say, I heard from so-and-so. Don't say, it happened. And then he said, well, what about what happened to me? I said, that's all right. Then you can just say, it happened to me. But if you've just heard something, then say that. I've heard from so-and-so person. And I've known this person for 20 years, and I consider them reliable. Therefore, I consider this report credible. So how you take care of something is also, am I acting as Krishna's servant? That also, within the boundaries of our service, doesn't just mean physical action. It also means mentality and etiquette. And even if you think someone's not deserving of etiquette, like this person wrote me, well, these rascals aren't deserving of any etiquette. So it's just, Hare Krishna. So even for, you know, our own self, just so that I stay within the realm of being a servant, there's a certain way that I should deal even with problems. Is that okay? Yes, Prabhu. Wow, what a question. Yes, definitely. Like Prabhupada talked about, that there would be an inevitable war between America and Russia unless Russia took to Krishna consciousness. And of course, we're making devotees in Russia faster than any other country. And there hasn't been a war. The time that Prabhupada gave for the war is come and gone. Definitely. The chanting of the devotees, the distribution of prasadam, the distribution of Srila Prabhupada's books is definitely changing the karma of the world. to more sins than they are able to commit. That's true. All right, we're now at 9 o'clock. I apologize that we could not possibly have covered this topic in anywhere near the extent that it deserved, and so you all may have more questions that have arisen from this class than were answered by it. But in order to stay in the time limit, that was the best I could do. Thank you. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.
He's the best student that I heard.